Okay, Samantha, you heard the name right there, Samantha. And also, this is prayer time for our building program, folks, to figure out which direction God wants us to go. And so please be in prayer about that tonight. And then we'll be having prayer after we're done here. But then Sundays, after the services, if you're able to stay, those that can, we're just going to gather down here at front, in the front here, and just have a time of prayer, seeking what God's will is for our church at this time. Okay, let's go ahead and take out our Bibles. Turn to James, please. James. Now, last week, we focused on how we are on the winning side. Do you remember that? That was good, wasn't it? I was encouraged by it. And kind of convicted, too, because, I mean, we've already won, and yet sometimes we live like losers, to put it bluntly, and we're not. We're winners. And so for me to get discouraged, or you to get discouraged, or us to give in to temptations, why? There is no temptation that we can't beat as Christians. Would you agree with that? That's true. That's a true statement, because we are imbued with God's power, the same power that raised Christ from the dead. That's the power that we have, and that's the power that's already beat Satan. Christ secured the victory for us with the cross and with the resurrection. We are God's child. We have God's power. Folks, we have already won. This whole thing with the spiritual battle that we've been looking at for weeks now, we've already won. But Satan is still fighting, isn't he? Would someone tell him that we've already won, please? But Satan is still fighting. I personally believe, the Bible doesn't say it, but I believe he knows he's lost. I believe he knows he's already lost the war, but he's still winning a lot of battles, isn't he? Given the fact that we have the power of God that already beat Satan, and that we are seated with Christ, and do you remember what's underneath his feet? The enemy, all right? That's where we're at. We are on the enemy's neck. Why does Satan win anything? Given those facts, we're told in James chapter 4 and verse 7, resist the devil and he will flee from you. Have you ever heard that verse before? So many times. It's one of those common Christian verses that we've heard over and over again. Many of you, if I had started that verse, you could have just finished it for me, right? And maybe you've got it on a poster or something or other in your house or on your screensaver, something like that. It's everywhere. Resist the devil and he will flee from you. Notice that one word there. Resist the devil and he will flee from you. Now that is an absolute promise from God. Can't get that monkey off your back. You know the cartoon figures where they got an angel on this shoulder and a little devil on this shoulder, and there's this battle going on back and forth. God says, resist the devil and he will flee from you. So, to answer our question, why does Satan win anything? The answer is, according to this verse, we just have to flip it back around. We don't resist. That has to be because of what God said. If we resist, he will flee. So we have to understand, folks, that spiritual warfare is not the exception. It doesn't just happen to some people sometimes. It's not about, like I had started the series off talking about, it's not about, you know, things flying across the room and tables levitating and in the dark of night and having some guy come in with a crucifix and some special water and recite the Lord's Prayer or Psalm 23 or whatever it is. That's not what we're talking about here. Spiritual warfare is not the exception. In other words, what I'm saying is every one of us are involved in spiritual warfare. Now, if you're a skeptic of that statement, you've just proven what I said. Satan wins because we don't resist. Now, think about the logic there. If we don't resist, there's no warfare, is there? So if we're skeptical of that statement that we're all in a battle, we're all in spiritual warfare, it's because we're not experiencing any warfare. And if we're not experiencing warfare, it's because we're not resisting. If we were to take our army and go invade a country, okay, war, and they don't resist from the very first minute we enter the country, there's no war, is there? They're not resisting. If we don't resist, there's no warfare in our lives. God said we all are in a spiritual battle. Paul told us that. We wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, and on and on and on. So let's look at our first point here. We have to recognize the tempter. How can we resist an enemy we can't see if we don't know he's there? Have you ever had someone sneak up behind you? Don't you hate it when they do that? I love doing that. I hate it when it's done to me. Every once in a while, my wife, you know my wife, sweet little Kathy. I never expect it from her. That's what makes it worse. That's why she gets me when she does it, because I don't expect it from her. I'll just turn a corner in the house, and boom, there she is. What is your problem? She's like, oh, not so funny, is it? How can we resist an enemy we can't see if we don't know he's there? Some things that we do, things that we allow them or do them because they seem innocent, don't they? And so we allow those things. Remember, Satan doesn't come to us with the big, bad, and ugly and say, hey, you want to do this? He's seeking to get a foothold with just little stuff that we view as innocent. And we don't even know he's there. Have you ever wondered this? Why is it we don't recognize Satan's temptations until after we fail? Think about that. I mean, that seems a little bit late, doesn't it? We want to deal with these things on the front side of the temptation, not after we've already failed. But to do that, we have to know how Satan works. He doesn't usually knock on the door, say, hello, I'm about to make you fall. That's not how he works. In the book of James chapter 1, if you'll turn there, James chapter 1, we're going to look at three verses there to start with. Verse 12, it says, blessed is the man that endureth temptation, for when he is tried, he shall receive the crown of life, which the Lord hath promised to them that love him. Let no man say when he is tempted, I am tempted of God. For God cannot be tempted with evil, neither tempteth he any man. But every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lusts and enticed. All right? James is telling us that if we are tempted to do evil, it's not from God. We can't say that our struggle with something is just God's way of strengthening us. Or this thing came into our life or into our mind, into our thoughts, and we think, okay, God's trying to make me stronger here. Let's differentiate it this way. God tries us, like James chapter 1 and verse 2. Count it all joy when you fall into divers temptations. Okay? That's different from the temptations we're talking about here in verses 12 through 14. God tries us. He tempts us to draw us to himself. That's the goal, right? We know that. God's trying to make us more like him. Satan tempts us to draw us away from God and to himself. So let's consider. First of all, letter A, God's tests. And folks, this is so important. How do you know if what you're facing is a temptation from the enemy or a test from God? Like it talks about there in verse 2, we're supposed to be happy about those temptations, diverse temptations. A question to ask yourself is this: if I give into this temptation, if I give into these thoughts, if I go ahead and do them, will I find myself being drawn closer to the Lord or being pulled away from him? And that's how we can differentiate it. If the situation is a test from God, you will be spiritually stronger. Now, you and I, we can fail God's tests, okay? We saw that Sunday night. Abraham, he didn't pass all of his big struggles that he had. And the failure of that test from God may draw us away from him. But that's an entirely different matter than us choosing to yield to sin. The goal of God's testing is to draw us into a deeper, closer walk with him. All right, letter B, God's revelations. Now, this is something else about God's tests. After God tests us, he often reveals aspects about himself through that test. Things about him that we would never have known at a deeper level if we hadn't gone through that test. For example, just ask Abraham, right? Do you remember the story of Abraham having to offer his son Isaac? We touched on it briefly last Sunday. Up there on Mount Moriah, remember, it didn't make sense. He couldn't reconcile it. He could have compromised. Well, maybe we'll do it later after I get a couple of descendants from him. No, he just obeyed God. It was a test. And what did he learn from it? Genesis chapter 22 and verse 14, Abraham called the name of that place Jehovah Jireh. As it is said to this day in 22:14, it says, "In the mount of the Lord shall it be seen," or "shall be seen, Jehovah Jireh, the Lord shall provide." He just learned that this God of heaven is a God that provides. And so God used that test to reveal an aspect about himself to Abraham. Now, think of it. If Abraham had failed the test in offering his son Isaac, he would never have known God as Jehovah Jireh. Never would have known God at that level. But because Abraham endured the test, and it was difficult, and it was hard, and it didn't make sense like a lot of his other tests, but because he endured, God revealed to Abraham his character as the provider for his people. He learned something about God. He learned something, and because he learned, he grew. Haven't you had this happen to you before? I mean, think back into your past. You go through some test, and while you're in it, you don't like it, like Abraham. And maybe your stomach is all in knots and you wish it would end. You wish it never would have happened. You wished it would just go away. And then you look back and you see God's sufficiency in a way you had never seen it before. I mean, looking back over my life, I am so thankful for the tests that God put me through. There are many of them I wouldn't want to do again, okay, from a human side of things. But from a spiritual side of things, I'm sure glad I went through those. because of what I learned about myself, because of what I learned about God, and the increased faith that came from that. God was faithful, and I learned something new and wonderful about Him each time I went through something like that. One pastor related his experience. He says he was in school preparing for the ministry, okay? Married, 2 children. Not the recommended way to go to school, by the way, folks. All right? Do that before the children and the wedding come along. The youngest one was just a baby. And they found out from the doctors the baby was dying. They didn't know what to do. He said this, the one thing we were afraid to do was just give her to the Lord. Let me just stop there for a minute. When I was in college, one of my instructors was 5 years older than me, maybe. He was new at the school himself as an instructor. And he and his wife had their firstborn baby. And they lost the baby after they had brought the baby home. Baby died. And it was a difficult thing. And I remember him giving a testimony in church one night afterwards. And he said he just went into the baby's room where the crib was and just prayed and said, God, he's yours. I release him to you. And he, I remember him telling how his wife about killed him for doing that because she wasn't quite where he was yet. But this is what this pastor had to do. He and his wife, they wrestled with this. He said, but we finally got on our knees and said, Lord, you can take our little girl if that's what you want to do. He said, it was the hardest thing we ever did. The most awful thoughts went through his mind. Like, here I am in Bible school preparing to serve God, and this is what happens? This is what you get? You're going to serve God and your little girl gets sick and is going to die? He says, yeah, I was accusing God. I wasn't happy with him. And he says, do you know where those thoughts came from? And then he wrote, can you smell the brimstone on those thoughts? He's preparing to serve God. This huge trial comes into his life and he is getting so, here's the word, discouraged. You know where those thoughts were coming from. He says this, I know now where those thoughts were coming from, but he said, but at the time I didn't recognize it. I didn't understand the enemy. I didn't realize that he put those thoughts there. I was struggling with God. You see, here's one thing that we know, folks. If we are ever discouraged, if there's thoughts rolling through our mind that are discouraging us deeper and deeper and deeper, know this, they're not from God. That leaves one other source. We need to dispel those thoughts. He said, now I understand that the temptation to doubt God, to question His goodness and His character, to just throw in the towel, was not from Him. Here's a truth to remember, folks. No temptation to doubt or discouragement is ever from God. Ever. Now remember, we're trying to recognize things before we fail, before we get discouraged. When the thought crosses our mind and we start chewing on it and rolling it around, we need to recognize where that thought is coming from. In fact, James tells us just the opposite in verse 14, which brings us to our next point, understanding the enemy's temptations. All right? Let's read that verse, verse 14. Let's read it out loud together, please. But every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lusts and enticed. Now, notice first that every person is tempted. All right? Can we just be humble enough to admit that? Every one of us is tempted. And It would be a very scary thing, I think, for a Christian to say, well, you know, this whole spiritual battle thing, this isn't for me. I mean, I don't need to hear this. I don't play with Ouija boards, and I don't have pentagrams in my house. I don't listen to, you know, satanic rock music. This stuff isn't for me. Satan doesn't bother me. Folks, no Christian is exempt from the battle. We're all in this. And secondly, temptation is well aimed. James tells us in verse 14 that every one of us is tempted, right? We saw that. We're tempted in exactly the same way, but not in exactly the same things. Some things aren't a temptation for some people. Not in exactly the same things, but in the same way. Satan comes at us the same way. It's through our lusts, according to that verse, or our desires. Whatever we desire, that's where he's going to come in and tempt us. And we all have different desires, don't we? I was having a conversation with someone earlier this week, and they were struggling with wanting people to like them. Now, how many of you, that's something you that's important to you? You want people to like you. You don't want people to think bad of you. It's okay. That's a good thing. But it can become a bad thing when if you think someone's thinking badly of you, it affects you in a negative way, right? And we were just talking, and I was saying, well, you know, I really don't struggle with that. I know what I just said. I don't care what people think about me, right? And that's not a bad thing, but it can be. Okay, so there needs to be a balance there. So Satan really doesn't come at me and tempt me with, and thankfully so, in the position that I'm in, oh no, they're not going to like me. They're going to be mad at me if I do this or say that. That would be awful for a pastor to have that as one of his desires, to be liked, okay? So Satan only tempts us to do what we would desire to do anyway. Think about it. If it doesn't have any appeal to us, it's not a temptation. All of us are vulnerable to temptation. Satan knows your combination. He knows just the mix that you're weak with. And he knows mine too. So when we're tempted with that combination that he comes at us with, it seems so normal that we don't recognize the one behind it. Remember, we're trying to see the temptation on the front side before we fail. And we maybe won't even recognize it as a temptation because it's so normal to us. He's only asking us to do what we're weak at anyway. So we don't recognize the true source of the temptation because what we're being tempted to do doesn't seem so unusual or off the wall. Like if you walked out of church tonight and Satan was there to tempt you to pick up an axe and go cut someone's head off. I hope none of you would think that's okay, all right? But that would just be off the wall, isn't it? That's not a temptation for any of us, I hope. Again, folks, what may tempt others may not tempt you, okay? But you can be sure Satan will tempt you in your vulnerable areas. For example, let's take shoplifting or stealing, okay? Any of you tempted to do that? Don't raise your hand. If you do, okay, everyone take note and guard your purse and your wallet and your coats and all that, all right? If you were, let's say, standing in Walmart, okay, and you're standing there by the back door, and it's open, The alarm was turned off, so if you go out the back door, you're not going to set off the alarms, and no one's looking, and there's a product there that you really, really want. No one's looking. All you got to do is pick it up, walk right out that door. Now, don't answer, but what would you do? Now, again, most of you, I'm sure, would say, nothing. Maybe we go shut the door or something. Or that's what most would say, because for most of us, that is such an off-the-wall thing to do, we wouldn't even consider it. There would be no temptation there. But you know what? For some people, that would be a ridiculous question. What would you do? They would think about it, because it would be a temptation. Their hands maybe would even begin to sweat as they're standing there thinking about it, and their hearts starting to race. They would have to fight hard not to do it. Why? Because they are battling a desire, a stronghold in their life that makes actions like that seem appealing. A family member of mine, not one of my brothers or sisters or parents, okay? Not immediate family, but extended, all right? Graduated from a Bible college, had a good job as an accountant, didn't need to steal. And one time I remember a family member of mine was home for the holidays. They had to go back home and bail him out of jail. He got picked up for shoplifting. And it's like, what? That doesn't make any sense to us, to people that don't have that temptation. It's not their desire. And let me give you another example. And I know this might seem a little bit on the edge, but it's real, okay? Consider four men riding along in a car. And all of a sudden, as they're driving along in the car, maybe down the interstate, maybe you've seen the billboards. Adult bookstore up there on the billboard. Now, the two men in the front seat have been in places like that. Going there is a tremendous battle for them. The two guys in the back seat have never had a problem with pornography, ever. So guess what happens, all right? The two men in the front seat are kind of mentally checking out the exit number or the address of the place in their minds, while the two guys in the back seat are saying, look at that place. Someone just ought to shut that place down and burn it to the ground. Right? To these men in the back seat, it's not a temptation. It's an eyesore. It's detestable. It's disgusting. So we all have our areas of temptation, don't we? And by the way, is one sin any more disgusting than another? I mean, when we look at some of the things going on in our culture today that are utterly disgusting, God looks at my sin and your sin the same way. It's utterly disgusting. I mean, look at the sins that God hates in the Bible. And you'll find envy. You'll find gossip in there. Lying's in there. He hates those just as much as the immoral sins that we have a hard time reconciling in our minds today. So now, that leads us to our next point, letter C. Don't judge others. And what I mean by that is, we don't look down our nose at other people because they're tempted with a particular sin. Because we're all tempted with a particular sin, aren't we? As you consider the nature of temptation, let me give you one caution here. Consider again the four men that are driving by that adult bookstore. The two in the back seat hate pornography. They can't understand why anyone would even mess with it. But let's suppose these same two men let's say, just happen to have a tremendous amount of lust, desire for material things. Okay? They still have a desire, it's just for something else. And they do or they sacrifice almost anything to get ahead, to be able to have a new car, to have better clothing, a larger house, more stuff. Do you know what most of us have a tendency to do? If we're the kind of person that goes after money, we look down our noses at people that, like, maybe use pornography. They're the bad guys. And the pornography users reason that at least they're not cheating or hurting anyone. Remember, we are neither to judge others nor think ourselves superior because of the areas in which we're immune from temptations. Because we still have our areas, don't we? As Paul warns, we are to take heed lest we fall. 1 Corinthians 10:12. We'll end with this verse. Wherefore, let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall. A fall is a fall. It doesn't matter what genre we're in when we fall. It's still a fall away from God. All right, so we're going to stop there for tonight and pick up again where we left off here next week and add some more to it. Let's go to prayer.